United States versus Ackley. Mr. Malone.
Good morning, Your Honor.
I'm asking this court to reverse counts 2 and 3 of three counts in the indictment as to Mr. Ackley's convictions on the grounds that he was convicted of an offense which was not charged by the grand jury. While the record shows that defense counsel in the district court did not object to the jury instructions as given by the court, this court still has the opportunity to review the argument that's being presented, which is essentially that the grand jury clause of the Fifth Amendment was violated in this case because the jury instructions as given by the court as to counts 2 and 3 essentially changed the offense for which the grand jury brought in the first place. This case proceeded somewhat in a confusing manner. I would note that the indictment, which pertains to counts 2 and 3, and indicates with the intent to convert them to his own use, did knowingly retain certain monies, funds, and credits. That language does not track the language of 18 U.S.C. 1167B. The matter is further complicated, I would argue, by the fact that the judge, in instructing the jury, never explicitly instructed the jury as to count 1, but did make an explicit instruction to the jury as to counts 2 and 3. Now, this created a problem. The first problem is that despite what the government has contended in its written submissions to the court, the accusation of retaining with the intent to convert is not the same as taking with the intent to steal. They are two separate acts. They're different. They are distinct, but they do define...
What's the difference?
The difference would be that with respect to taking with the intent to steal, that is a wrongful taking, whereas retaining with the intent to convert for one's own use is in essence a lawful taking, and that the...
Not with that intent. You know, they just sound to me like synonyms. I can't figure out what the difference is.
Well, I think the Hill case, which I cited, probably includes somewhat of an apt phrase when it states, I believe, that every stealing may be a conversion, but every conversion may not be a stealing, to the extent that in this particular instance...
That's right. If I'm a bailee, if somebody gave me something, and after I receive it, I decide to keep it, right? That's a conversion, it's not a theft. But if somebody is charged with taking with intent to convert or to steal, it's all the same, because you have the intent at the time you get the money. And that's normally understood to be the difference.
Except that
that's
the possession...
Why I'm that's why I can't see the difference between these phrases.
Well, the possession in a taking with intent to steal is a wrongful possession to the extent that it is taken, in essence, without consent. In this particular case, in Mr. Ackley's situation, there was not a taking in the sense that there was a request made for a travel advance payment. And as a tribal chairman, Mr. Ackley had every right to make that request, and under the provisions of the tribe, they had every right to provide and issue a check for that travel advance payment. So there was a taking in that sense, but there wasn't a stealing without consent. The government alleged in counts 2 and 3 that there was a conversion, rightfully so, but that that was not what was charged by the judge. The judge charged a taking with an intent to steal, and under the facts, the specific facts of this particular case, I don't believe that there was, in fact, a taking with an intent to steal, and that those are, in fact, two separate provisions of one particular offense. The confusion that I think prejudiced Mr. Ackley in this particular case came to the extent that there was a count one. And count one in this case involved approximately $38,000. And that amount was an amount which included the $1,500 amount in count two and the $1,800 amount in count three. And the government's theory of prosecution, at least according to its closing argument on count one, was that Mr. Ackley stole that money. And I submit that by taking that money, by making that argument that he took that money, what essentially the government did was it said that it allowed the jury to think, well, if he took the $38,000 and then if the $1,500 and the $1,800 are part of the $38,000, then he probably took the monies involved in counts 2 and 3. And then the jury was further bolstered by the fact that the judge instructed them that what they were to find was that Mr. Ackley took that money with the intent to steal. The problem arose, however, in the fact that Mr. Ackley was not indicted by the grand jury on a taking with intent to steal. I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Malone. Mr. Liskam?
May it please the Court, I am Bill Lipscomb, an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee, representing the United States. This is a case of plain error. The defendant was given the opportunity to object to the jury instructions before they were given to the jury, given the opportunity to object to the instructions after they were given to the jury, and the defendant said he had no objection, or counsel said no objection in each instance. In reviewing this record then for plain error, the question to this court, as the court phrased it in the Rumska case cited in both briefs of the appellant and the appellee, is whether, but for it, the mistake, and that is the jury instruction that was allegedly erroneous, the defendant probably would have been acquitted. So the question is then, looking at what the defendant is essentially arguing, and that is that there was a constructive amendment, that essentially the charge was willful misapplication of funds, somehow equivalent to a wrongful conversion. If the jury had been correctly instructed on willful misapplication, would the defendant have been acquitted? And the answer is no. The evidence in the case was that there were 23 separate misapplications of funds or thefts of funds by the defendant. That is that in the general scheme, he obtained travel advances by check from the tribe and the gaming funds. He then, having received sufficient funds and funds to include the hotel expenses, he then in each instance charged on a tribal credit card those hotel expenses. There were 8 instances of that conduct prior to the 2 instances that are charged at counts 2 and 3. The jury could reasonably infer several theories. One, that the taking occurred, or that a wrongful conversion or the misapplication of funds occurred at the time that he took the initial check, because based on his course of conduct, that was the scheme he had begun and concluded on prior occasions. Or second, that at least by the time that he paid for the hotel expenses with the tribal credit card, the taking or the misapplication of funds had certainly occurred. But that is certainly consistent with the jury instructions. It is consistent with the charge that was in the indictment, and it is consistent with the willful misapplication of funds, which generally the defendant appears to argue that the government charged and attempted to prove. Based upon the standard that's before this court, and that is plain error, the government would ask the court to affirm the convictions below.
Thank you, Mr. Liskin. Ms. Malone?
I think what I would conclude to this court is the following. If the government had presented the charge as to counts 2 or 3, either in a conjunctive format or if someone had realized at the time that the jury was being instructed that there was an improper instruction relative to counts 2 and 3, that there was a mistaken instruction that was taking place, then maybe we would not necessarily be here. But I think the significance of what happened is important, because what the grand jury said was that there was an offense that took place. We find probable cause that an offense took place one way. But by the time that the jury has this case for deliberation, what has happened is that all of a sudden there is another theory of prosecution which involves another means of committing this offense, which results in, I would argue, a conviction occurring for a crime that was not brought by the grand jury. And I think for that reason alone that the convictions on counts 2 and 3 should be reversed. I have nothing further to add.
All right. All right, thanks to both counsel. And Mr. Malone, I want to extend a special thanks on behalf of the court for your accepting this appointment.
Thank you very much.
The case is taken under advisement.